This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about credit cards, the relationship between debt cards, and something that you may not have heard of, prepaid credit cards. We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about a pending $7.2 billion, that's B as boy, billion settlement involving banks and retailers regarding surcharges, etc. Fortunately, at least at this point, this is not going to affect adversely Californians because we have a law here in California that prohibits surcharges if you use your credit card. We'll also be talking about something that, frankly, is new to me and it may be to you, called Independent Foreclosure Review, which is monitored by one of the offices, is the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, related to actually home foreclosures. So you might be interested in that if you are facing a foreclosure or have gone through a foreclosure. My guest is Joseph Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action. That's the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. During the program, I will give you the website and phone number for Consumer Action, which you might find helpful to write down in terms of you're doing some research for the future. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and by the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And Joe, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
Very nice to have you here. Let's do this, Joe. There is this situation. I'd like to start with this because it is so new, if you don't mind. Something called the Independent Foreclosure Review. And of that, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency oversees that. The Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve Board or System oversees that. What is that and what is the significance of it? And I know in a conversation that you and I have had just before we went on the air, not many people who may qualify for this are even aware of it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This independent foreclosure review is something that any homeowner, any mortgage holder that was in the foreclosure process during the years 2009 and 2010 is eligible for a free independent foreclosure review, irrespective of if they lost their home or if they got current again. It came out of some consent decrees that were issued by, as you say, the OCC and the Fed, and also the now-defunct Office of Thrift Supervision back in the spring of 2011. And it's been around for a while. It started at the end of that year. And the deadline has just been extended until the end of 2012, December 31st, 2012. So anybody who was in the foreclosure process in 2009 and 2010 really has nothing to lose by entering this process. And if they were victims of abuses by their servicer or their lender, then you could be in line for compensation of up to $125,000.
But if, Joe, if I may interrupt for a moment, if you don't know that there have been abuses, how do you, as a consumer, know whether or not it's worth it for you to petition or whatever the proper terminology is for an independent foreclosure review?
Well, if you enter the process, then you're eligible for a free review by an independent consultant.
Mm-hmm.
You really are not going to have to do very much legwork.
I see.
It's really just a matter of responding if you feel that you were the victim of abusive foreclosure practices during that time, 29 and 2010, because an independent consultant will review all this stuff that's presumably qualified to evaluate whether or not these abuses existed. Now, like in San Francisco, for example, the SF County officials, they did a survey in February of this year. They did an audit of a whole bunch of different foreclosures. They found that 84% of the 400 foreclosures they examined contained irregularities.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very likely that many of the people, even if they're not aware of it, that were in the foreclosure process in 2009, 2010, were victims of abuses by their lenders. So it makes a lot of sense to enter this. The problem is the federal government has been mailing these letters. About 4 million letters have been mailed out, but they're just using the U.S. mail to contact borrowers. And so just think about this. They're mailing these letters. It's a population that disproportionately has lost their homes. And is mail really the best way to reach them?
Doesn't sound like it.
No. So, you know, not surprisingly, the response rate has been disappointingly small. It's been just about 5% of those who received these letters.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the people who are in the foreclosure process have actually responded. So it's a program that very few people know about, and we're trying to get the word about out so that people who are eligible can be compensated if they were victims of these abuses. You've got till the end of this year, but if you don't reply, then you will not be eligible.
You're out. So, sure. If you don't reply, then you're out. If listeners who believe that perhaps they would like to look into this further, if they go to the Consumer Action website, will that tell them how they can go about making contact with this review process?
Yeah, absolutely. We spotlight a lot of consumer news items every day on our website, which is consumer-action.org, and that does include the independent foreclosure review. The direct site you'd want to go to for this thing would be www.independentforeclosurereview.com.
I see.
That has all the details, and you can begin the process to get this free review by banking regulators.
And you can do this. You can do this online, can you not?
You can begin the process online.
I see.
So it eventually will surely require the use of probably hard copy documents down the road. But you can begin the process online, and it's one of those things that not everyone has found out about it because of the way that the government is trying to reach the population. For example, in addition to just using U.S. mail to people that may not live at that address, they only set out the letters in English. And as everybody who's followed this foreclosure tragedy closely knows, people who are speaking English as a second or third language were disproportionately affected by these foreclosures.
Yes,
so if you send it out only in English, that's another barrier to people responding. So it really hasn't been run as well as it could have been, but the good news is that there's still time to enter the process. And if you were a victim of abuses by your lender, you may be able to get a couple $1,000 of compensation. That's not going to be very helpful in comparison to the loss of one's home, but it is better than nothing, and it is free.
Let me give the Consumer Action website again, www.consumer-action.org. And, Joe, what was the Independent Foreclosure Review website again?
That was independentforeclosurereview.com.
.com, okay. Independentforeclosurereview.com. And hopefully, if you have lost your home, and you don't even have to be in a position at this point where you have lost your home, could you be in the foreclosure process right now and still go to the Independent Foreclosure Review to see if whether or not what's going on is appropriate?
I mean, anybody who has questions should go to that site.
All right.
And they will have some answers. But,
okay.
But basically, you don't have to have lost your home during this time, but anybody who during any time in the year 2009 or 2010, if you lost your home during foreclosure, or if you just entered the foreclosure process because of errors during a trial modification, or if there were errors during your trial modification, or errors or other issues with your modification applications. There's all kinds of issues that can be addressed by this independent foreclosure review. But basically any error or abuses that you feel a servicer, a loan servicer, may have committed during that time could put you in line for part of the compensation that they've set aside.
There is something called, there is something that's in the process of being considered for settlement of $7.2 billion, B as in boy, billion dollars. These are, I think primarily, as I understand it, the issue is surcharges affecting retailers. Tell us a little bit about that. And as I understand it, the consequences of this, of the assuming that the settlement goes through, which it probably will at least as far as California is concerned, will not affect us. But review that briefly for us, would you?
Sure. This is a settlement, a preliminary settlement that was announced last month. It's basically a fight between giant retailers like Walmart and Target and other giant retailers and giant banks. And it's about something called interchange fees. These are the fees that consumers do not pay directly, but merchants pay in order to process credit card transactions, essentially. It costs merchants when you use a credit card on average about 2%. Sometimes a little higher if you use a signature card or a American Express card, it can be up to 3%, but on average it's about 2%.
Mm-hmm.
And merchants greatly resent the interchange fee. And this settlement was about Visa and MasterCard price fixing, getting together, colluding, and charging merchants more than they should have been charging them. It was a court battle that went on for the better part of a decade. And as the settlement, the credit card processors, Visa and MasterCard, agreed to pay these giant merchants and some small merchants about $6 billion and reduce interchange fees for a period of 8 months that'll be equivalent to about $1.2 billion.
That's where it comes up to 7.2, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
But what does it mean for consumers? Because,
yes,
you know, it's certainly good news for merchants. They can save a lot of money in interchange fees. But does that mean it'll help consumers? Interestingly, it doesn't. There have been some instances where interchange fees on credit cards have been capped. They did this in Australia last decade. And what wound up happening after interchange fees were reduced and capped at a certain level is that banks compensated by charging more annual fees for using credit cards, reducing rewards programs.
Charging consumers more annual. All right.
Yeah, as banks lost some of their profitability to these merchants because of the interchange fee cap,
mm-hmm.
they compensated by charging consumers more right off the bat, as in the form of annual fees, a reduction of reward programs. And the merchants, unfortunately, did not pass a penny of the savings onto consumers, according to the studies done after the fact. And, you know, there was also another court case in 2003 that dealt with something that's known as the honor all cards rule, that basically the merchants defeated the big banks and credit card processors there and won billions of dollars in a settlement. And, you know, subsequently they had conference calls with Wall Street analysts, and they were asked during these conference calls, well, you know, you've got billions of dollars as a result of the settlement, so are you going to pass this on to your customers?
Mm-hmm.
And the retailers said, oh, of course not. Mm-hmm. We're going to pass this on to our shareholders. And, you know, if you think about it, of course that's what they're going to do. That's what they're in business for. They're there to reward their shareholders. And, you know, not surprisingly, there's no evidence that you passed this savings on to consumers. You know, both sides say that they're on the side of consumers, but there's no track record that shows that retailers are going to pass this on to consumers. They're going to pass it on to shareholders.
Assuming that the $7.2 billion settlement takes place, what significance is that to Californians at this time?
Yeah. Fortunately, in California, we already have a law in the books written into our civil code that says you may not surcharge credit cards. Now, you actually can do that with debit cards, but with a credit card, it's prohibited, and anyone who is confronted with a credit card surcharge, you know, for example, they could, hopefully they could just instruct the merchant they could change the bad practice. But, you know, if you really wanted to, you could take a merchant to small claims court and mm-hmm. win triple damages. Those damages probably would be very small, but that would be your right under California law, because you just can't do that in California.
And certainly also, Joe, if this was a practice of a merchant of charging people, charging consumers a surcharge in California, and persons in a particular county made complaints to their local district attorney's office, the Consumer Protection Unit would look at that, because I'm speaking from my own personal experience as a deputy DA in San Mateo County, the Consumer Protection Unit. We would look at it very carefully with the thought that we might want to bring an unlawful, unfair business practice civil action against the merchant. So, which means restitution for the consumer. It also means, from the merchant standpoint, the potential for having to pay civil penalties. Like a fine. So it could be a serious matter. So, okay, so the $7.2 billion settlement at this point will not affect, as far as we know, California consumers.
Right, because the element of the other element of this settlement that affects consumers is that retailers will be allowed to surcharge credit cards. Now, as we mentioned, in California you can't do that, but you used to be able to do that nowhere, because it was prohibited by Visa and MasterCard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The terms of the settlement provide that where it's not legally prohibited, retailers will be able mm-hmm. to surcharge credit cards. It's brand new. It's very bad for consumers who use credit cards.
Yeah.
But in California,
and we're okay.
Nine other states, we've got this built into our civil code to prohibit it. But that's the new wrinkle on what credit cards will be like going forward if you're in one of the 40 states.
Yeah, I think it was, as I recall, when Judge Quentin Kopp, retired now from actually San Mateo County, when he was a member of the California legislature as a senator, I think he's the one who introduced the proposal for enacting a no surcharge provision in the civil code, as I recall. In any event, let me do this. I don't think enough people know about consumer action. Would you take a minute or 90 seconds and tell us something about consumer action, which is a national consumer advocacy and educational organization?
Yeah, consumer action is, we were founded in San Francisco in 1971. At the time, it was just a few volunteers, a phone and some donated space, and we ran a hotline out of the basement of a church. And we've grown, and we're now a nationwide organization. We have a presence in Washington, D.C., and a presence in Los Angeles. We were instrumental in helping pass the Credit Card Act in 2009 that many listeners are probably aware of. We were instrumental in helping pass the California Lemon Law in the 1970s. But we, we're proud to be one of the early presences in the consumer movement from 1971. And at this point, we have an advocacy wing of our organization. We also do a great deal of educational outreach. We partner with about 9,000 different community-based organizations in all parts of the country and run train-the-trainer sessions so that we build educational modules in up to 8 different languages on things like how to use credit cards, how to avoid identity theft, how to choose a cell phone plan, all sorts of consumer personal finance topics, and allow all sorts of different communities and different language groups to bring this information to their communities and teach them with these materials that we do in roundtable sessions. And we send out about over 1 million free pieces of free information, free consumer educational materials every year. We run a consumer complaint hotline in 3 different languages, which you can call at 415-777-9635 or email us. And we have a wing that tries to spotlight federal and state legislation that is particularly important to consumers. And you can check out our Take Action page from our homepage on consumer-action.org and learn about the things that we're working on and learn about some of the history of consumer action and things we're doing.
If organizations want to have someone from Consumer Action come to speak on a particular consumer topic, does your organization have persons available to go out and do that? Is that what you've just told us, or what?
Yes, we definitely do, and we can do it, even in other languages than English.
That's wonderful.
Spanish or Chinese. You can go to our homepage and click on the Outreach tab, that can help try to arrange speakers or educational roundtables for future events, and we're definitely happy to do that, and it is free.
I know that you speak Spanish, do you not?
That's true, I do, yeah.
Yeah. Have you been asked by any Spanish-language radio stations to come on and talk about any of this stuff?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Radio and TV stations.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm very interested, and yeah, I do speak.
Very glad to hear that, in light of certainly the independent foreclosure review, because, as you said, it was only in English.
Yeah, I should say, one of the things that we're very proud of at Consumer Action is that we not only generate a lot of free educational materials, but we do it in all these different languages. And we've been doing it since, the 1980s, when at the time we realized that the biggest abuses in the marketplace were falling upon those who did not speak English as a first language. So it's been, since then, a very fundamental, important point to write all our publications in languages such as Cantonese or Mandarin or Vietnamese, Spanish, or others, and make them available to those who really are more likely to fall victim scams or not be able to understand the fine print even than...
Well, that's outstanding, really. Before we get to talk about prepaid credit cards, which probably a lot of people don't know about, and I must include myself When I asked you to come on the show 10 days or 2 weeks ago, I was not aware of prepaid credit cards. But let me tell you who's on the program with me. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. If, by the way, you are listening to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.kalw.org, we will be taking your calls in the second half hour of the program, and I'll give you the phone number at that time. My guest is Joe Rideout. Joe is Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. You might want to jot down this information if you haven't yet. The website for Consumer Action is www.consumer-action.org. The phone number, general phone number, is 415-777-9648. And then, Joe, you mentioned 415-777-9635, and what's the distinction there?
Well, the 9635 number is the one for our consumer hotline.
The hotline, okay.
If you have questions or concerns or complaints they'd like to refer to us, that's the number to call for.
And will they, in calling that number, will they talk with someone, an actual human being?
They eventually will.
Eventually, okay.
Leave a message. All right. Just we're a relatively small office, and enough calls come in that we're forced to call people back.
But that's wonderful.
Call people back promptly, we do have to have people leave a message for them.
All right, terrific. All right, let's talk then about this area called prepaid credit cards. What is this, and why would someone even consider this?
Well, prepaid cards. It's actually been gaining popularity at a pretty amazing pace. Consumers, let me just explain what this is. It's sometimes called a stored value card. It's not a debit card. It's not a credit card. It's really kind of a gift card with some extra fees on it. What it involves is paying a fee usually to load money onto this card, and sometimes there are many other fees that come with it, such as monthly fees, inactivity fees, fees to withdraw cash, but at that, once you have money on this card, it can function just like an ordinary debit or credit card, in that you can use it online to make purchases online. You can use it to buy gas. You can use it for anything. You could use a credit card or a debit card for, practically. And it's being marketed to those who have little or no credit or damaged credit. Those, for example, who are unbanked or underbanked and do not have a relationship with a bank or credit union where they could get a free debit card from, or who maybe have just soured on the major banks so much that they're sick of paying mandatory monthly fees and they've left the banking system. The prepaid card is one way that banks, because they are behind this too, are trying to keep people using plastic and spending. It's an industry where people loaded over $70 billion onto prepaid cards in 2011, and it's about...
Across the country.
Across the country, mm-hmm, yeah, and mm-hmm. That's expected to double again this year. It really is a growing industry, so, we're not necessarily fans of prepaid cards. If you have a debit card or a credit card that you're not paying a bunch of fees on in the first place, there's no reason you need a prepaid card, but... It is something that people who are emerging from bankruptcy or have no credit history or who have no banking relationship, in a pinch, it can be a useful payment instrument. So what we did was we surveyed 28 different cards from 11 issuers and tried to point the way for people to make good choices and find out what kinds of fees they would incur depending on what kind of card they get.
And you have this on your website.
Yes, it's on our website. It was actually for people who are members of Consumer Action. They would have received this in newsletter form from our Consumer Action News, which we send out quarterly to our members. Anyone who wants to become a member can become one off our webpage, but it's free on our website, so you're free to check it out. Because some of the prepaid cards really do vary drastically, and it's good to be aware of which are most suited to your needs if you need a prepaid card. And again, most people do not need a prepaid card. But for those who do, we looked at a couple of cards, like the American Express Bluebird card was one that has very minimal fees compared to others. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a mandatory monthly fee as long as you're loading $1,000 or more. So if it's your main card, where, for example, you're having a direct deposit being loaded onto it, you're not exposed to a monthly fee. There's other cards that'll charge you upward of $10 for a monthly fee. There's one that actually had $14.95. So that varies quite a bit. That's one of the most fee-free prepaid cards we found, the American Express Bluebird. There's other ones, especially some by NetSpend, that can be just filled with fees and can really erode someone's savings.
What did you call that one?
Well, it's called NetSpend. That's a bank. It's just a branded card, but it's called NetSpend. They have one plan that's called a pay-as-you-go plan.
Uh-huh.
It charges you a dollar every time you buy something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it
can be expensive.
So you can imagine how this could quickly eat up someone's
savings. It could be expensive.
If you put $500 onto this card and, you know, you go out to lunch and spend $6 at McDonald's.
And you pay an extra buck.
There's an extra dollar per purchase. That's, you can see how that's just not an appropriate product.
What about legal protections using one of these prepaid cards as opposed, let's say, to a debit card or a credit card, assuming you do have a credit card?
One of the things that, we try to spotlight.
And we got about a minute before we have to break.
Yeah, we've got basically three different kinds of protections. Credit cards, which have the best protections. It's under the Fair Credit Billing Act. As long as, for example, let's say your card is lost or stolen. If you notify your bank within 60 days, the most you'd be liable for is $50 maximum. Plus, you have chargeback rights. By far, the best protections compared to debit cards or other forms of plastic. Debit cards are much weaker, but still better than prepaid cards. If you lose your debit card or have it stolen, as long as you notify the bank within 2 days, there's a $50 maximum liability, but after 2 days, it goes up to $500. And after 60 days, your liability is unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do we have with prepaid cards? Nothing. All you have is voluntary protections. And in many cases, the issuers will match existing Regulation E protections that debit cards enjoy, but they could withdraw them at any time. And we're calling upon the CFPB or other regulators to make sure that consumers who use these cards don't get left out in the event their card is lost or stolen, because voluntary protections for such an important financial instrument is not adequate.
We have run out of time on the statewide version. For those of you listening to us live, we will continue. It is just about 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about credit cards, debit cards, prepaid cards, protections for those, or at least reviews for those who have unfortunately lost their homes through foreclosure or perhaps are in the process of facing the loss of a home. So if you have a question, a comment, or would like to talk or about the what is bothering you in the area of consumer protection, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guest is Joe Rideout. He's manager of consumer services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. In case you didn't get it before, the website is www.consumer-action.org. The statewide number is 415-777-9648. The hotline is 415-777-9635. So if you, however, have a question and you'd like to pose it to Joe Rideout, please don't hesitate. 1-415-841-4134. Let me also let you know that next week, next Wednesday, we're going to do our Call a Lawyer night. That's August 22nd. And we'll have attorneys here off the air to talk with you at 1-800-525-9917 while I'm doing the program on the air, Landlord-Tenant Issues and Laws. So again, next week, August 22nd, is Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917. And let me just mention to you, so you know it now, I have been told, and I guess it was last week, that because of the Republican and the Democratic conventions, we will not be on the air on August 29th or on September 5th, because the station, I guess National Public Radio, I presume, including this station, will be carrying that portion of the respective conventions live, or at least in some fashion. If not live, then perhaps recorded, but I suspect it's going to be live. So let me mention this to you before we take our first call. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KLW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. Of course, during normal business hours, it's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in the state of California, every county has a bar association, a county bar association, and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, again, during normal business hours. Hopefully, and I think this is what usually happens, you'll be able to speak to a human being and tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area and will set you up with a half-an-hour consultation with an attorney face-to-face. If you can't get into the attorney's office, I think they'll do their best to try to give you an opportunity to talk with the attorney over the phone. The cost of this, and it doesn't go to the attorney, it goes to the Bar Association, for a half an hour, depending on the county, could be a low of $25, perhaps a high of $35. So it's a great service if you need it. I hope you don't, but it's available there for you if you do need it. And we're going to start with, let me see, Gareth, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Welcome to the program.
Hi. So I want to make a comment that I believe there's another potential application for these cards that I'd like to follow up on. I'm the trustee of a special needs trust, and it's tricky to get funds into the hands of my trustor. I'm currently using a Bucks card, which...
Hey, I'm sorry, what do you call that card?
A Bucks card, B-U-X-X. It's a commercial product.
Oh, I've never heard of it. Okay, go ahead.
The advantage of it is that the funds on account are still properly owned by the trust rather than the trustor until the trustor actually performs, does some transaction at a store, and there's a limited set of kinds of transactions the trustor can do, groceries and the like, depending upon the requirements of SSI and so forth. So I was wondering if these gift cards that you're discussing also meet that criterion and would be a backup that I could use in addition. So,
but they're not, Gareth, they're not gift cards. They're something similar, but it's not the same situation. But, Joe, if you would respond to Gareth.
Sure. These prepaid cards are stored value cards. It may be the same essential product. They may not have the restrictions that you're looking for, because the cards that we surveyed are all just general purpose reloadable prepaid cards.
By reloadable, so you mean you can deposit more money into the card?
You can deposit more money onto them. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's no restrictions, for example, on using an ATM to withdraw money, or what kinds of products you could buy with it. So I'm not sure if that's one element of the product you're seeking, but it may be that the Bucks card is a prepaid card, or they at least offer a prepaid card.
It's like a prepaid card. It's actually tied to a bank account, so it can be reloaded directly from the bank account. But it's only one product, and I want a backup, and it can't be another Bucks card because you can only have apparently one of those. For a person whose name is on the card.
Would you not use a debit card for this purpose?
Because the funds on account in the bank account that would be attached to the debit card would be in the name of the trustor, which would be bad because he would have to report this to SSI, for example.
Oh, right? Really?
And so the reason the Bucks card works is because the funds on account in the Bucks card before they're actually withdrawn by the trustor are owned by the trust.
Mm-hmm.
And they become the trustor's only at the point where he actually takes the funds out. So I'm mm-hmm. looking to duplicate that functionality outside of the Bucks card system.
Well, you know, I can invite you to take a look at our survey. You know, we surveyed 28 different cards. You could see if one of them seems to be a ready backup for what you're looking for. It's available on our website at consumer-action.org. You can read the summary, or you can go into the actual data and look at all the different fees and different features of each specific card. I think that might be the best place to start. There's also a website, nerdwallet.com. This also, it has a prepaid card calculator that allows you to compare about 60 different cards.
Nerd, N-E-R-D, wallet.com?
Yeah, okay. As in Revenge of the, nerdwallet.com.
Okay.
That also has a nice comparison tool for prepaid cards. And I think between those two sources, you should be able to find something that would work.
We're going to move on, Gareth. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. All right, here's a question that was brought into the studio. Where does the PayPal card service fit into this mix, if it does at all, Joe?
You know, I have not researched a lot directly on the PayPal card, but my understanding is that it's using PayPal's existing system and not partnering with a bank. But I may not be 100% on that.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Research for yourself, but my inclinations to think they're trying to use the PayPal system and steer clear of the Visa MasterCard transactions that prepaid cards use.
Certainly, if you had a prepaid card and you did not know, you hadn't dealt with a merchant before, or you're thinking of buying something online, you would want to be very careful, would you not? Because if you don't get the product, or there's something wrong with the product, you don't have the kind of protection that even you would get with a debit card, let alone a credit card, would you?
Well, that's true, yeah. I mean, certainly with a prepaid card, you wouldn't have the same protections as debit or credit cards. But, you know, in addition, there's the phenomenon of card blocking or card holds that, you know, for example, when you go to a gas station, that gas station will put a immediate $75 to $100 block on your card.
And even if you've only bought, let's say, $20 worth of gas?
That's correct.
Why
the hotel? Well,
how can they get away with that?
Well, they're just trying to make sure that there's enough money on the card to pay for it. Hotels will block even more money. Like that can be actually hundreds of dollars. So if you're using even a debit card, or a prepaid card for that matter, you might wind up tying up all your funds and not have access to them when you need them.
Yeah.
Really, with any kind of online transaction, if you have access to a credit card and a debit card, always use the credit card because your protections are so much stronger. And if you get ripped off during the transaction, or the item arrives broken, or there's any kind of dispute whatsoever, you have chargeback rights with a credit card. You don't have that with a debit card. Mm-hmm. You definitely don't have that with a prepaid card. So it's definitely advisable to use a credit card whenever possible.
Okay, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Joe Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. The website is www.consumer-action.org. And let's see, Will, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
How you doing, sir?
Okay, you're on it, Will. This is your chance.
All right, I have a question for Joe. Joe, I have two problems. The first one is the credit score monitoring unit. I feel it is one-sided because they listen only to the big corporations and nobody ever hears the side of the consumer. My question to you will be, what is an effective way to have your own side of the story sent over to the credit monitoring agencies? Because credit monitoring agencies play a very big part in this country, going that you can't do anything if you have a bad credit. I think it's very important that they hear both sides of the story. The second part will be...
Will, stop for a moment, if you would, because the quality of your phone, whatever it is, because I think you're on the road, is not very good. Let me see if Joe understood your initial question. Joe, did you understand that?
Oh, yeah. Will's pointing out, you know, quite correctly that there's a lot of bias
the credit reporting system in the three credit bureaus and how really that can wind up catching a lot of innocent people in a bad situation. You know, I'll give you a couple examples, and hopefully none of these happened to Will, but I suspect perhaps they have. You know, people have bad or good credit scores for all kinds of reasons, and it doesn't necessarily reflect a responsible or an irresponsible person, you know, if you have a good or a bad credit score. You might have a person who's been a very responsible person in terms of paying their bills, but, you know, for example, perhaps they were in some kind of accident or they went to the hospital, and their insurance company fouled up the paperwork, and they didn't send it to the hospital. The hospital sends you to collections. Even though this was supposed to have been covered by your insurance company, you might wind up with a severely damaged credit score because a collection account is a credit score killer, and that's not necessarily a function of an individual's irresponsibility. That's a function of the inadequacy of our healthcare system and the irrationality of how insurers deal with hospitals and how consumers sometimes get caught in the middle. You know, sometimes when you go to open a bank account, even though no credit is being extended, if you go to, say, a Bank of America bank, they will actually pull a hard credit inquiry on you and reduce your credit score, even though they're not extending credit. You're just opening a regular bank account. Chase will not do that. Citibank will not do that. Bank of America does. Why? There's no reason. But I think Will is absolutely accurate in pointing out that there's a lot of unfairness and there's a lot of discrimination that should be stamped out.
What's your second point or question, Will? Are you still there? We're having a real problem. I think we lost him. So sorry, Will, if you'd like call back, maybe you can talk with Martin on the phone and give him the question and he can bring it into the studio. I think we have lost you, unfortunately. Hey,
let me just add one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I could just add things.
Go ahead, Joe.
If I could just add one thing for Will, too. You know, you do have the right to add a personal statement to your credit history.
Oh, sure. Up to 100 words, isn't it?
Yeah. If you really disagree with what your credit score or credit history looks like, you can add a statement. Really, that's not going to change things that drastically, but you do have the right to dispute anything and everything on your credit report that you disagree with. So we encourage you to do that.
Okay. All right. Hayes, H-A-Z-E. Hayes, welcome to your legal rights.
Good evening, Jeff.
Hi.
I've got one question then a comment. Basically the pay-as-you-go credit card, do they insist on checking your ID and social security number for those nowadays?
Yes. Virtually every one of these prepaid credit cards, you know, because of Patriot Act requirements, they will actually demand a social security.
Okay. That's interesting because years ago when I was illegal, they didn't. So that's because to get...
Like, and now you're legal and they do, huh?
Yeah, well,
that's wonderful.
Now I don't care. But, I mean, you had to get into a hotel or to travel, you had to have a credit card. And you used to be able to get a pay-as-you-go credit card without having a social security number, which was great.
Yeah, I mean, you could buy an ordinary gift card that is not reloadable. So you could walk into a Wells Fargo or a regular bank and buy a $100 gift card or a $500 gift card. But the reloadable ones, you will have to provide that kind of information.
Right.
But, you know, the good news is you can get a perfectly legitimate debit card that'll be cheaper over the long run.
Right.
Because these prepaid cards are expensive. With just a consular ID or other forms of identification,
right,
even if you're not living in the country legally.
Okay. The other comment was that if the best way of getting a credit card that I've discovered is if you join a credit union, get a bank account, because they give you a credit card and you sometimes get percentage back. And I found has been the best way.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, people do not consider going through a credit union to get their credit card, but it's, you know, it greatly increases the likelihood that, A, you'll be charged fewer junk fees by your credit card issuer, and B, that you may find a more personal and maybe even humane response if you do run into trouble managing the account. There's a lot of good reasons to get not only to bank with credit unions, which have demonstrated clear superiority to the big banks, but even to get a credit card.
Joe, if I may interrupt you for just a moment, why would getting a credit card to a credit union be less expensive? What would be the motivation for the credit union to do that?
Well, there's you're less likely to encounter an annual fee with credit union credit cards. Mm-hmm. And some of them actually have superior reward structures to some of the big banks. Like if you look at, it's a very large credit union that anyone could join. It's called PenFed or Pentagon Federal Credit Union. Mm-hmm. This is a credit union that offers, like, you can refinance your car loan at 1.5%.
Wow.
But they have a credit card that actually gives you up to 5% cash back on your gas purchases. So that's
very
better than you're going to find from any other, mm-hmm. even megabank. Megabanks usually have better rewards credit cards, to be mm-hmm. fair. But, in this case, here's a credit union that trumps even the big banks for a rewards credit card. So there's a lot of reasons to look at what credit unions have to offer because it's often a better product.
Anything else, Hayes?
I just want to say I'm glad I put that in the ballywhack, and I'm glad that you understand how it works.
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Here's another comment that's been brought into the studio. I noticed that my bank is now charging me a $2 monthly fee for check imaging processing. What is this? Do you know about this, Joe?
Well, it could be that this person has requested copies of their checks. It used to be pretty common for banks to just send you
the canceled checks themselves.
Yeah, the actual canceled checks. Now banks are trying to save money on that process by charging you to have that service either on a per check basis or as a flat fee. It could be that they have requested checks in the past or that they've failed to opt out for check imaging. I would suspect that if you communicate with the bank that you might be able to opt out of the service if it's not worth it. It doesn't seem like it would be worth it for too many people because it's pretty easy to reconcile your spending.
Your own checking account, sure.
Right.
Well,
maybe it's a deal breaker, and it's time to break up with your bank. It might be a nice moment to reevaluate what other options are out there. If it's a $2 fee that they won't remove.
All right, Reed. Welcome to your legal rights.
Hi. This question goes back a couple of years to when Chase acquired a couple of banks with whom I had credit cards. And after acquiring them, they gave you the option of either closing the accounts or putting up with a higher interest rate. I chose to close the accounts. In one case, I did not receive, I don't think, a bill as I usually did. So the bill that I eventually received alleged that I had not made a payment, which was true. And charged me $35. But in addition to that, they raised my interest to 29.9%.
Because the payment had not been made?
Because the payment had not been made.
I see.
Now, I've asked them to review this. The first time was they said after a year they would.
After
a year. When I called back, I don't know whether they reviewed it or not, or maybe they gave a reason for not being obligated to review it or saying that I think maybe they said my credit rating was too low or something it couldn't be changed. Do I have any options here? This is ridiculous that, I'm paying 29% on a closed account.
Well, after years have gone by, your options are more limited than they were at the time when your original bank was digested and Chase did this. I'm suspecting this all happened prior to the CARD Act taking effect.
Yes.
Because so we're talking of like at least 3 years ago.
Yes.
That's these are the kinds of things that, not that this really helps you directly right now, but these are the kinds of things that could not happen in this day and age. Post-CARD Act, a bank could not just instantly say, we're going to raise your APR. They have to have cause. You have to actually be paid late or defaulted on your card agreement in some way. They cannot raise your rate willy-nilly the way that certainly Chase, but also many other large banks used to do routinely prior to 2009. Now, I'm assuming this is probably now a bill that's in collection.
How much you got on it, Reed? How much money is there?
Frankly, exactly. I'd have to look probably a couple, maybe $2,000.
Okay.
I mean, assuming it's in the hands of a collector.
No, it's not in the hands of the collector.
Not yet, anyway.
It's still with Chase. Okay.
I continue to make payments, mm-hmm. as I always have. I don't understand actually why my credit rating would not could be used as an excuse, because I always make my payments,
mm-hmm.
and
that doesn't make a lot of sense.
A very good system for tracking my credit card bills. The fact that one was lost, I have no idea how that happened. I think I never received it.
The best thing I can recommend to you, Reed, there's also post 2010, I should say, we've got the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and for any kind of credit card abuse, this is the go-to agency. Even though it happened so long ago, I still would recommend you go to, it's at consumerfinance.gov. It's also called the CFPB, called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But they have been exemplary in shaking these banks by the lapels and getting them to go the extra mile to resolve these kinds of problems. You know, 3 years later, you're going to have a hardest time than somebody who just had this happen to them last week,
mm-hmm.
but I would still strongly encourage you to file an official complaint with the CFPB.
Okay, that's consumerfinance.gov?
Yeah.
Is that a federal agency or
It's a federal bureau. Right?
Federal bureau, okay.
Yeah, it's up and running. It's the one that Elizabeth Warren mm-hmm. kind of set the blueprint for, and Richard Cordray runs at this point. But the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they've done a lot of really good things for credit card users who have been abused by their banks.
You said it was in Reading?
No, I didn't. No, it's in Washington, D.C., but there's also an office in San Francisco here. But, consumerfinance.gov is where you'd want to go. It's been up and running.
Up and running, that's what you said.
Up in Reading, yeah. Maybe they'll get an office in Reading sometime.
Reed, whatever you do, don't go to Reading on this, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Reed.
Make the trip.
Yeah.
It is.
Much too hot. Thanks very much for calling. All right. This is Your Legal Rights. We're in San Francisco and not Reading. And in any event, the number 1-415-841-4134. And by the way, next week, August 22nd, is our Call a Lawyer night. On the air, we're going to do actually landlord-tenant, which we try to do at least once every 6 to 8 weeks. And my guests will be James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld, who do, I think, an excellent job of talking about tenant-landlord issues and the laws, etc. And then we have a number of attorneys who are here in the conference room who will talk with you off the air at 1-800-525-9917. Frank, welcome to Your Legal... Oh, wait a minute. Will is back with a follow-up. Will, quickly, what is your follow-up? Will, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, Will, what is your follow-up?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, well, come on, you're on the air.
All right. I have a serious problem with using my debit card and having to pay a fee at the merchant. Oh, my God. It tears me apart, sir. It ranges from 35 cents to a dollar. I don't think there's any reason why we should be paying money to spend money. The bank tells you everything. You get a point. You get points for using your debit card. You save this for using your debit card. It's better to carry a debit card than using cash. And we all know in this country it is safer to hold a plastic card than to carry cash. But more than half the places we spend money demands that we pay a fee for using our debit card. I thought debit card was as direct, even more direct than credit card. Because credit card is, when you use a credit card with a merchant, I believe it takes some time to get that credit process. But a debit card is a direct PIN number that says authorize your bank to give that money over to the merchant. I don't see any reason why we should pay to spend money.
All right, let me get some comments from Joe on that. Take the answer. Turn your radio back up, Will. Thank you for calling. Joe, do you have any further comments for Will?
Well, I agree with Will, and I think, you know, it makes sense to indicate to the merchant that this is a deal breaker, as long as you have some other places to shop nearby, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. To not go along with that. I mean, but he makes a very good point that, you know, merchants really do, a little too much sometimes to charge consumers for something that ultimately benefits businesses. I mean, businesses really benefit from the use of plastic, be it debit cards, be it mm-hmm. credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have to pay, you know, up to 2% for credit cards or a very trivial amount, and now it's about 24 cents maximum for debit cards. But, mm-hmm. you know, what businesses, when they whine about the cost of these transactions, what they ignore is that, you know, it costs business money only if you choose to ignore the corresponding cost of, say, getting armored cars to carry the cash.
Mm-hmm.
If it was mm-hmm. an all-cash society, safeguarding all that cash from mm-hmm. robbery by their mm-hmm. employees mm-hmm. Or by robbers mm-hmm. That their hypothetical cash-only non-credit card world would require.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, to say nothing of the drop that they would in revenue they would suffer from longer transaction times and the removal of this proven overspending effect that credit cards and debit cards inspire in their shoppers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Frankly, there's a lot of benefits that businesses derive from the use of debit cards and credit cards. You know, and also there's a taxation issue too. You know, the absence of credit and debit cards and the use of cash encourages tax evasion by businesses.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point.
There's a lot of good reasons
good
to help businesses, consumers, and society to use plastic, even though that we can sometimes use them to excess and get into terrible trouble, and banks can abuse us. But I think Will makes a very good point, and I think it should be pointed out to that merchant that this is a deal breaker, and they're about to lose a customer, and they should lose a customer.
Now, last question, Frank. We have about half a minute for you. Can you make it very brief?
Basically, I'm in about $35,000 to $40,000 worth of credit card debt, and I'm interested in trying to learn about debt settlement options, if there's any companies that you recommend or legal issues that I should be aware of.
There's only one thing you need to know about debt settlement. They're going to rip you off, and they're not going to do what they promise. This has been proven time and time again. Studies have shown that 3 out of 4 people who enter debt settlement programs don't complete the program. You'll throw away thousands of dollars. They won't do what they promise. And even if they do maybe settle 1 or 2 of the accounts, you're likely to be sued by 1 or 2 of the other creditors.
Let me ask you this.
I would look at, you know, credit counseling, consolidating the debt, mm-hmm. or, you know.
I don't seem to be able to do that. I read a book about how to settle debt myself.
Or do it yourself. That's an excellent thing.
That can be very good.
Like, that makes a lot of sense. Paying a company to settle your debts, terrible idea. Do it yourself.
Also, Frank, I think it's worth it, and we're just about out of time, worth it to go and have a consultation with a bankruptcy law certified specialist. You may be able to do that without any initial charge at all. I suggest that you go to the Board of Legal Specialization website, www.californiaspecialist.org, www.californiaspecialist.org. Call them go to the website, see in your geographic area who the certified specialists are in bankruptcy law. Call those offices, see if you can have an initial consultation and if there's any charge. Many bankruptcy attorneys do not do that. We have run out of time. I want to thank you, Joe, very much for joining us again. It's wonderful, wonderful to have you on the program. Again, it's Consumer Action, the website www.consumer-action.org. Joe Rideout is the manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action. Again, Joe, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Very, very nice to have you on the program. Your Legal Rights Protection staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Trusts and Estate section of the same of the State Bar, I should say, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. All right, next week we will be doing our Call a Lawyer night. On the air, we will have James Coy Griscoll and Mark Seidenfeld. We'll be talking about landlord-tenant laws and issues. If you'd like to join us for Call a Lawyer night, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.